Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio, Sinoland, Seek Truth from Facts Foundation, the China Writers Group, and I can even throw in the Bioweapon Truth Commission. And I am going to the south of the equator to Argentina, and I have got Josh Snyder on the show today. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm really happy to have you on the show. It's taken us a while, basically because of me for dropping the ball, but I'm really glad to get you on the show. Josh is an American. He is living in Argentina, and he reached out to me on WhatsApp and told me that he has done his research. He had been doing research of various kinds, and came up with some interesting discoveries about WikiLeaks and its origins and inspirations. And I was intrigued enough that I wanted to hear about it. And he's got a couple of videos, and I'll leave the links for people to look at the videos. But take it away, Josh. Looking forward to what you have to say.
Okay. Yeah. Sort of on WikiLeaks, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So to give sort of a brief overview of what WikiLeaks is, or what I've found, is WikiLeaks is essentially a tool of the U.S. government to help them carry out regime change or help them destabilize global South governments. And so that's essentially what they were born to do and what they did. There are obviously cases, well-known cases, where they put out leaks on the U.S. government itself. But what that was sort of a limited hangout in 2010.
Please tell people what a limited hangout is, because I actually had to look it up when I did the book review of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book, his Wuhan book about the coronavirus. Tell us what a limited hangout is. A lot of people don't know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I had to look it up at one point too. It's, you know, somewhere where you hang out and you're like really interested in, you know, what the politics this organization is putting out and publishing and everything like that, the information you're getting from them. So you hang out there, but it's not actually giving you the full truth. It's kind of giving you a little bit of truth and then steering you in the direction that they want to steer you. Like I would say, sort of like Alex Jones was that, in terms of showed us a lot of truth about 9/11 and conspiracies, but steered people to the right economically. So he also might be a limited hangout.
So what happened in 2010 as a limited hangout?
Oh, so they came out with various projects of leaks, like the Iraq war logs, and I think they're called the Afghanistan logs. And essentially what they were doing were leaking on war crimes and torture and civilian deaths, you know, by the US military in these places. And this is kind of what got WikiLeaks famous. But you'll notice that with the Iraq war logs, for example, they never really put out leaks on the real reasons why government officials actually started the Iraq war in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it could be geopolitical reasons, it could be oil, but obviously there are probably conversations and documents out there that, you know, within the Pentagon and within the CIA that would show us that, but WikiLeaks would never actually leak that kind of thing. And if they do later on, they never promote it. And what they promote are their leaks on, war crimes within these wars. So it's sort of like saying the unjust war itself is not a crime. Like it's okay that we went in because of terrorism or whatever. But we just need to tweak the system a little and clean it up so that we don't have these civilian deaths and war crimes within this unjust invasion of a country.
Mm-hmm.
And but with those leaks on Iraq and Afghanistan and on the Pentagon and stuff, even though it didn't cause any detriment to the West and the US imperialist program around the world, what it did is it lent WikiLeaks credibility, saying, see, we're not just attacking global South countries, we're also attacking the US government and the Western governments. So once they had that credibility, the first thing they did right after that in 2011 was Cablegate. Cablegate enabled them to cause the entire Arab Spring. And so they were able to take out four leaders in the Arab world, and they started the process of the Syrian civil war. And after that, when they couldn't take out Assad, then in 2012, they put out the Syria files, which sort of made Syrian government look bad and different things. Go ahead.
When you say, do you think that those Syrian files to discredit Assad and the Syrian government, do you think they're actually true, or are they fake news?
They could be true. I didn't look too much into what's in them. I looked at the summary of what they are.
All right.
One thing they did, aside from try to sort of embarrass Assad and I guess the Assad regime, we could say, or the Assad government and his ministers and everything, was also to embarrass Western corporations who were still doing business with Syria, or even like Gulf State or other, you know, Western affiliated Middle Eastern governments who were still doing business with Syria. Because at that time in 2012, they wanted to put strict sanctions on Assad. So, and that was their stated goal, one of their stated goals in Syria files.
Wasn't Julian Assange supposedly, was he involved in WikiLeaks, or he was asking people to send information to WikiLeaks, or is that his own website that he has?
Oh, Assange is, yeah, the head and founder of WikiLeaks.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, yeah. You mean because you kind of saw that he got freed recently, or?
Yeah, but I mean, so do you think he's CIA?
Oh, yeah, 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 definitely. So WikiLeaks is Assange. And later on, once they sort of put on a public face and did this sort of like big shift in their in how they present themselves to the public. Before, they were like kind of not out in front of cameras. And with the Iraq war logs, that's when Julian Assange came out to the public, started doing interviews. And that's when they started adding some other team members and stuff that were actual people. But before that, we only have evidence of like one guy aside from Assange in the beginning, one real person who was involved in the day-to-day operations of WikiLeaks. So it's basically Assange is WikiLeaks. Yeah.
Well, then why did they persecute him for 12 years, you know, and lock him up in the Ecuador embassy, and then he was in prison at High Marsh in England for 4 years? Why all that then? I don't get it.
Oh, okay. Essentially, from my point of view, it's just theater. You know, again, it lends him like credibility as like a genuine grassroots hacker leaker guy who is not affiliated at all with the government. And so, I mean, from my point of view, that this all took place in London, which is sort of, it started this whole Western empire that we live in right now. And it's sort of sister, you know, the sister country to the US of this Western empire in right now, that London would be hesitant to send Assange to the US. I'm skeptical about that. That doesn't make sense to me.
that you're skeptical that England would not send Assange, or that they, or that they pretended not to send him? I don't understand. What do you?
So for a while, once they got him out of the embassy,
yeah,
he was in this
in the Ecuadorian embassy, yeah,
right. He was in there for a while, and then they got him out eventually, and then he was in this prison in London,
High Marsh. Yeah, I think it's called High Marsh.
And they were saying there was this big battle between in the, you know, the English courts, between the U.S. government and Assange's lawyers, whether England would extradite Assange to the U.S. And that just didn't seem plausible to me. I mean, we're talking about, you know, aside from New York, the banking center of the world and the mother of the whole empire, that they couldn't get, you know, a judge on the bench, you know, just fix it and extradite him to the U.S. doesn't seem plausible to me. So that's just my point of view. But
I wonder, because he sure, you know, I'm sure, you know, he was in solitary confinement in High Marsh, and I just wonder if maybe he got into this and then it just got out of control and ended up lasting a lot longer and a lot and it kind of went south on him. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, things are plausible. I personally don't think that, but what I'm aiming more to do with this is make people skeptical of what the storyline that Assange has sort of led us to believe, right? So essentially, as long as we're skeptical about WikiLeaks and the fact that this no-name guy just kind of got over all over the front pages of mainstream media in the US and all over the world, should make us skeptical to begin with. And so, yeah, just sort of showing reasons to be skeptical. He, before WikiLeaks, he was arrested in Australia. And so this is another reason, cause for skepticism of Assange. And it kind of goes to what you're saying, that he may have been under threat. He was arrested in Australia for hacking the U.S. military. This is when he was 20 years old. And he hacked into various U.S. military installations. And this was during the first Iraq War. And he also claims that he hacked into MILNET, which was the internet for the entire U.S. military. And he says he had control over that for 2 years. Whether he did or not, I'm not sure. But he didn't have to do any sort of deal with the U.S. government during the trial. He just pled guilty. And then the judge, just saying he was young, he was 20 when caught, 25 when convicted, just let him off. Maybe there was a little community service, but just let him completely off the hook after hacking in to the U.S. military's entire internet system. So, yeah, this is a reason to be skeptical. And we can compare that to another guy. Do you know Anonymous? Hacking?
Yeah. Anonymous, yeah.
Yeah. So I came across a case of one of their lead hackers named Sabu, who was also in his 20s when he had hacked into a corporation that he didn't realize was affiliated with the FBI. And so the FBI found him right away. Once he did that, you know, arrested him. And he only had two options: spend 25 years in prison or become an informant for the FBI against Anonymous. And so he became an informant. And so this to me is like the real way that, you know, if you're a hacker that gets caught like that and, you know, they have you over the barrel, I don't know if that's the expression, if they have you over a barrel, then they're going to use you for their purposes. And, you know, obviously if Assange had gotten caught as he did for hacking into the U.S. military and he was already over 18. What was I going to say? then the U.S. military and their prosecutors would have probably wanted to use him in some way or other. So he may mm-hmm. have been under threat or had made this backroom deal with them since he was 25 years old.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Also, within the CIA, it's not monolithic. There's different factions and there's different groups and there may have been a group that he worked with that, you know, wanted to cooperate with him. And then there was, but then the other group didn't like him and, you know, and got him, arrested. And, because obviously the phony stories about, you know, consensual sex and not wearing a prophylactic and, with the Swedish lady and all that. I mean, it was obviously just completely bogus as an excuse to jail him. So it could be that he thought he was working with the right people at the CIA and another group more powerful decided otherwise. What do you think?
Yeah, I think all those options are on the table. I think anytime we're talking is about someone like we could take, for instance, Bernie Sanders, who, you know, talked a lot about what he wanted to do and then just laid down flat for Hillary Clinton and did whatever mm-hmm. the needs wanted him to do over and over. And it's hard to know if they're just part of the team from when they were a young person, sort of, you know, inducted in somehow when they were, you know, of a young age, or if they're under some type of threat, or, you know, any of the complicated options that you just sort of laid out on the table. Yeah.
Well, you look at Jeremy Corbyn, the labor leader, you know, in the UK, who was just completely, you know, destroyed because they claimed he was anti-Semitic just to get rid of him because he was really liberal. I mean, he was like, you know, yeah. socialist. And Bernie Sanders is, you know, also considers himself to be a democratic socialist, and they're sure not going to let the city of London and Wall Street and NATO are not going to let people like Jeremy Corbyn and Bernie Sanders get anywhere near, you know, positions of real power. So they were both taken out. And And as you said, I have a really good expression. I have what's called the Imperial Toolbox, and the Imperial Toolbox, if I get my alphabet right, from A to Z is assassinations, blackmail, bribery, extortion, fake news, and false flags, and that's what they do to control people, control politicians, control organizations, et cetera. They don't hesitate. And so what happened after so I remember Julian Assange, he was like inviting people to send stuff to WikiLeaks. Do you think that WikiLeaks was also set up so that the CIA would get information that they otherwise might not be able to get, because people were like sending it to WikiLeaks thinking that it was not the CIA and that it was above board, and then the CIA was getting valuable information? Do you think that's also a possibility?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I hadn't thought about that too much before, but yeah, that seems like a possibility. And then they can just sort of like, you know, nab whoever is trying to rat on them, right? Mm-hmm. Or yeah, get a hold of the information that they might not have had before. Yeah. And they, you know, they set up this Dropbox system. Initially, it was supposed to be an actual wiki, which means end user editability, like Wikipedia was maybe in the beginning. And then they just quickly, you know, before they even started operating, switched this Dropbox system. And they say that the cybersecurity of their Dropbox is like really stealth, and no one could find out who's dropping the information in, right? So if the CIA were to get information that they wouldn't otherwise get, they wouldn't, according to WikiLeaks, know who uploaded it into their Dropbox. But apparently the guy who set up the cybersecurity for this Dropbox system likes to stay anonymous. So we have no idea who he is. So just kind of another reason to be skeptical about the whole operation. Yeah.
And so what are some of the other famous WikiLeaks? I actually have used WikiLeaks for China. Okay. Yeah, there were some cables. Okay. There were some cables from the U.S. Embassy going back to Washington that showed that they knew that Tiananmen Square was not a massacre, and that it was relatively peaceful, and that it was basically an inside job by the Western embassies. So those cables showed that there was no massacres, there was no shootings, there was none of that. Yeah. And then the other one was there were WikiLeaks about Xinjiang. The Muslim province in northwestern China, and the leaks were saying there's no organ harvesting, there's no persecution, there's none of that. We know it's not true, but we need to keep the pressure on China, you know, to persecute them. So I actually have used WikiLeaks.
Yes. So, there's definitely like legit information on there. I mean, I would say most of it's legitimate, you know. But what I started to do is look at what they themselves, through their Twitter account and social media, promote and don't promote. So, for instance, through a FOIA request through a reporter from Wired magazine. That's how these Hillary emails came about. I don't know if you remember the Hillary emails.
But
later on, we saw through that huge chunk of 30,000 emails that they did in fact kind of know, Hillary and I think it was Sydney. I think it was Sydney Blumenthal, one of her advisors, that, you know, everything that, you know, that their invasion of Libya wasn't quite legit, that there weren't these large groups of rebels that could take out Gaddafi on their own with just a little support, and different emails between them during Libya. But WikiLeaks never promoted that. That was just sort of in the huge group of 30,000 emails. And they probably didn't promote the Tiananmen Square stuff you're talking about either. It was just probably within their archives somewhere. Because they actually started out as Chinese dissidents, according to themselves, back in 2006, 2007.
Who were the Chinese dissidents?
WikiLeaks.
Oh, WikiLeaks? Oh, they, yeah, so, they said in 2006 that they were Chinese dissidents?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Here, let me can I share my screen and I'll just
Sure, please. Okay.
Let's see here.
I've never done this on
sorry, I just made a little mistake. I want to share a certain window here. Yeah, here. And let's see. Okay. Yeah, this is WikiLeaks' initial advisory board.
Yeah.
So you'll see. Here's Julian Assange. Can you? Is it big enough?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Well, I can see it, and I'm not close to my screen, so it should be okay.
Okay. Great. So this is Wang Zhen.
Okay.
He was like the leader, right, of Tiananmen.
Yeah. One of the big ones.
Yeah, and then you see Tibetan exile,
human rights activist
Wang Youcai, who's also known Chinese Democracy Party, and they were calling these are just the advisory board; they're not the staff, right? And in defense of like Wang Dan and Chao Sheng, like when they were approached by, I think, Mother Jones magazine in about 2009 about being on the advisory board, they said they didn't really know why they were on it. This is going to become important. So there were only three guys that actually responded and said, yeah, I'm on the advisory board. It was Philip Adams, CJ Hinckley, and Ben Laurie. And those are all white Western guys. And then we'll get into a little bit with that. But if we go over here, I hope this is not it. No, this is another one. So this is the Sydney Morning Herald from 2007.
Yeah. Yeah,
because WikiLeaks sort of announced themselves and got together in the very end, November 2006. And so you can find a handful of articles from different newspapers about WikiLeaks at that time. And so it says, yeah, Chinese cyber dissidents launched WikiLeaks, a site for whistleblowers. And so this is according to them that they're Chinese dissidents.
I had no idea.
Right.
I had no idea. Do they actually name who the dissidents are, or are they unknown?
They're unknown. Yeah.
Okay.
I found through these handful of articles. Actually, I even have one here that WikiLeaks archived on its website. Also from 2007. This is from the Federal Times. And so we see here the spokeswoman for WikiLeaks at that time, Hannah DeJong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I found two people like that who did interviews with newspapers in 2007 who were WikiLeaks staff members, you know, aside from Assange. And they both had Asian-y sounding names, Hannah DeJong and James Chin. But the thing is, they say in all of these articles that the interviews were done through email. So, you know, I could just make an email, hannahdejong@gmail.com, and say I'm Hannah DeJong instead of Josh Snyder. So my point is, like, these two staff members are not actual identifiable.
Yeah. Humans.
Yeah. But yeah, she was the spokeswoman. She was saying in this article that they were just going to put out software for leaking for the public to use, like an actual wiki type software. A wiki means like it's a whole group effort and the end user can edit the product. And so that's what she was saying at that point. And you can see here, we're seeking funding from groups like the Soros Foundation's Open Society, right? And so that's the only, you know, foundation she listed of where they're seeking funding. So they were obviously, that's their main, that was the main source.
Yeah, well, wherever George Soros goes, there's going to be, he is one of the world's biggest saboteurs. DeJong could also be like Dutch or could be Dutch. I don't know. I don't know if there's ever been a picture of her, but that's really interesting. They and Tibetan, Russian and Tibetan expatriates. Well, I never knew WikiLeaks was supposedly started by Chinese dissidents. Well, where did Julian Assange come into the picture? From the very start.
WikiLeaks was Assange's creation, even when he was just a blogger, like sort of a hacker blogger. He was sort of writing down his thoughts in the year preceding founding WikiLeaks. I think he was like even traveling around Asia at the time. And so this was sort of like a process. He was talking about wanting to make this sort of thing. And he had talked about it with other hacker guys online and stuff. Yeah. So the very beginning. Yeah.
That is really, really interesting. And founded by a group of technologists and Chinese dissidents.
Yep, so that's what they were claiming right from the start. They did an about face with in 2010, and all of a sudden weren't Chinese dissidents. And I can show you something humorous from South China Morning Post. Did you see this in the video? Or in 2010,
their own WikiLeaks.
Exactly.
I actually have a subscription to South China Morning Post, so I'll send you the whole article because it looks like you can't get to it because you're not a paid subscriber.
I did read it, but like through an archive site.
Chinese dissidents. I'll look it up and send it to you.
Yeah, so these Chinese, this guy who called himself Deep Throat. So this was in 2010, after October, after WikiLeaks had already blown up on front pages everywhere. So these guys, these hackers who were, also we didn't know who they actually were, but they were online. And they were seeking help from WikiLeaks and wanted to start their own WikiLeaks sort of to expose the Chinese government.
But it's
almost like they forgot that they founded WikiLeaks.
Well, what happened in 2010 that caused WikiLeaks? Was that the Iraq files with the film footage of the helicopter killing the Bloomberg reporters? And okay, so that happened in 2010. Then Syria trying to take out, well, not only Syria but Tunisia and Libya. They bombed Libya into oblivion.
Yeah,
and assassinated him. Yeah. So
can I backtrack a moment? Okay. So
I'll find that and send it to you after the show. I've got the date, 22 October 2010, and I'll send you a PDF of it.
Okay, cool.
Oh, that's funny. Did the Chinese dissidents ever get their own WikiLeaks up and running, or was it?
And they said they contacted WikiLeaks through the three contact emails that were available on WikiLeaks.org.
Yeah.
It was returned to sender, which means that WikiLeaks didn't even have a way of having it being in contact at that time.
Okay.
With the
public. All right.
But yeah. So, I wanted to show you also from the beginning. Let's see where it is. Okay, this is their original frequently asked questions page back in 2007. I'm sorry. There's just so much information here, it's hard to keep track of. But this was their original, one of their original statements on WikiLeaks.org, right? This is the Sydney Morning Herald reporting this in their original about page.
Our primary interests are oppressive regimes in Asia, the former Soviet bloc, sub-Saharan Africa, and the Middle East. Okay, so the main target was to go after America's enemies or Western Empire's enemies.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So they stated it from the very beginning. They say, WikiLeaks is an international collaboration of various backgrounds, some Chinese. They mentioned Chinese and Chinese dissidents everywhere, the Chinese government, in their original documents and interviews. So this was actually an interview with Assange here.
Yeah.
The Chinese were not people living in China, but expats.
So,
if we go back to the FAQ page, because this kind of illustrates also, as well as that quote we just looked at, why is an open government so important? And what they essentially are saying here is an example about malaria.
Yeah.
And they're essentially saying that Africa is malaria ridden because of corruption, and Great Britain and North America are not malaria ridden because they have less corruption, right? And so, I mean, we can actually read it out if you want, but I don't want to.
You know, you're the second. I just saw this recently. Where did I see that? I think it was maybe on Twitter or something, and maybe Africa one of the African Twitter sites, but that said that that used that same ridiculous analogy to blaming malaria on corrupt governments. That's just unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, this looks like some of this look like this looks like something they got off of some other site and they liked it. Yeah. So, yeah, it might be being passed around in those circles.
The difference is good governance. Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's awful. So this, exactly. As if like Great Britain and the U.S. have nothing to do with Africa's plight in general.
Nor not to mention their corruption.
Exactly.
Which are 10 times more corrupt than Africa, that's for sure. I mean, it's the worst in the world is in the West.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Good so government can show. Find out and deploy the answer for global warming, new technology. Oh, my God. Yeah, this is like something that Bill Gates wrote.
Yeah, well, Assange is and his wife too, who came later, whose actual real name is Sarah. It's not Stella. It's a little weird. They're from sort of the Human Rights Watch, USAID. Okay. I don't know some of the other names of these, big name, big money, West human rights organizations. That's sort of their crowd.
Oh yeah, and I saw the same. Put another way, unresponsive or corrupt government through malaria alone will bring about the deaths of about 7 jumbo jets full of children in the next 24 hours. That's a children's 9/11 every day. I just saw this this week, and I thought it was disgusting.
Yes, exactly.
And this is on the, now is this still on WikiLeaks or is this their very first one that you got off it's, of?
You won't see it like if you click any of these links on their site, but you can use their search engine and search for it. It's archived on their website.
Okay. All right.
Or sometimes you actually have to use Google, maybe you search for these quotes and then you'll find it on their website.
Okay. Yeah. Open government is strongly correlated to quality of life. Well, unbelievable. So,
yeah. But if people want to see that, I mean, I can send the links to you and whatever if you want to.
Please send the links and I'll add them to the interview page.
Yeah, yeah. And so what I found this takes a little bit of connecting the dots. Let's see here. Okay, so there's something called the Global Online Freedom Act from 2006. And so I've kind of determined that WikiLeaks came out of that. And this was a bill in Congress to basically try to deter U.S. businesses from, cooperating with, what they say are restrictive
governments. Undesirable, anti-Western imperial.
Well, yeah, in reality that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to sort of quote it from them a little bit.
To
keep free flow of information going in those countries. Global Online Freedom Act. So this gave birth to an organization called the Global Internet Freedom Consortium. And also GIF before that, this is Global Information Freedom. But specifically in 2006, this GIF consortium was founded in February 2006. And so they tell you that right here on their governmental support page. And later in 2010, you can find articles saying that the US government gave the GIF consortium $1.5 million. And the Chinese government responded saying that the Global Online Freedom Act is specifically to try to destabilize China. So they publicly responded.
Oh, that's really interesting. Unbelievable. This is in 2006, 2007.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically 2006, and that'll make a little bit of a difference. So yeah, you can see right here, Voice of America, Radio Free Asia, CNN, And,
well,
the
first two are pure CIA. I mean, those are CIA organs, and Google is the CIA, and I don't and I don't think CNN is much is much you know doesn't fall too far from the tree either. So
of course,
So this is really the consortium partners are truly field tested. They have had unprecedented success in creating anti-censorship technologies that can penetrate China's Great Firewall.
Yep.
Oh my.
Yeah, God. Yeah. That's what the Great Firewall.
And they have also been able to react quickly to attacks from state censors. Oh my God.
And they specifically really talk about the Great Firewalls of China, Iran, and Burma. At this point, I'm surprised they still left this site up. So let me see.
And I'm sure George Soros and all the other USAID, NED, I'm sure over the years they have probably, you know, which are all, you know, CIA compatriots are probably involved in this too. So it's just unbelievable. I can't prove it, but this is what you're showing me is just incredibly right down the alley of CIA. It's unbelievable.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. And so we see here that they're Falun Gong. It says most of the volunteers.
Gong. Oh my
exactly.
God.
From China, and many were also attending in 1989. So that's who they are. Yeah.
God, this is unbelievable.
But
unbelievable. You've done some terrific research, Josh. I'm really impressed.
Thanks. Yeah, what kept me at it was I thought that when I sort of showed this to pro-China, anti-imperialist camp of people who are interested in that stuff, that it would just go viral, you know? So I thought I would actually, you know, get a bunch of subscribers and stuff. And I was really disappointed to see people like so narrowly pro Assange without wanting to consider it, at least so far. But I did a bunch of research on it anyway. So not you, obviously, you're pro China and you're totally open to this, but I knew you were a really open-minded person, you know? Let's see, we have the GIF consortium.
Go a little bit further down. We see from Falun and Tiananmen. And then what is this about the CCP? GIF has been conducting in-depth analysis of the workings of the Chinese Communist Party and the needs of internet users in China. This is really bizarre.
Yeah, it's essentially a bunch of softwares that they created that are kind of act like VPNs so people in China can, you know, get beyond the firewall, which, I mean, they're kind of actually...
If for any Chinese, if they want a VPN, they can get one. They're all over. There's VPNs all in China.
This was like
2007. Yeah, 2007. Maybe not back then, but... Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that 99% of the people don't want a VPN and don't, you know, and don't care. You know, they trust their media, they trust their government, they trust their leaders. They have something like 80% of even international surveys like with Pew Trust and Gallup have done numerous polls where the trust in government, the satisfaction of their government, the direction that their country is going towards, you know, their trust in their media. And China is just at, you know, 70, 80, 85, 90%.
Exactly.
And all of the Western countries are, you know, 30, 35, 40%. So the Chinese are very, know more about what's going on in the world accurately than the Westerners do. That's for sure.
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of it's just about stability and economics and economic growth and opportunities for people to have decent, you know, standards of living. And that's, you know, people don't always like to admit it, but that's what they'll actually vote on if their standard of living goes way down. And they like to give a lot of lip service to freedom of speech, which is important to a certain point, you know, but a lot of, you know, most people vote on economics and stability. So to show the connection between the GIF consortium and WikiLeaks and Assange, we want to go to, so actually let's go back to this advisory board here. Okay, so we got to understand who CJ Hinckley is specifically.
I've heard his name, that's all I know.
Oh, okay. So, like I said, most of these other guys said they didn't know why they were on this advisory board. this guy, Philip Adams, did say he was on the advisory board when this Mother Jones did this article and the journalist reached out to all of these people. But he said he got sick right around the founding time of WikiLeaks and so had nothing to do. He knew nothing about their day-to-day operations. So he's sort of out. Ben Lurie is an internet security expert, so he helped out set up the cybersecurity for the site. But he said WikiLeaks is really mysterious. He's never had anything to do with their day-to-day operations. They just sort of put him on the advisory board. And he's had some contact with Assange, but he doesn't really know anything about any of the leaks or anything like that. So this guy's sort of out. So the only guy on this advisory board, and remember, the staff members were just email addresses. So all we have from 2007 as like real identifiable people that are part of WikiLeaks are Assange and CJ Hinckley. Mm-hmm. And CJ Hinckley, when he was interviewed by Mother Jones, said he's totally involved with all the day-to-day operations of WikiLeaks. So essentially, he was Assange's right-hand man. At this time, at the beginning. Now, he is, let's see if this is the about page. Yeah. So he started this FACT, Freedom Against Censorship Thailand. You lived in Thailand, right?
Yeah, for a year. But unfortunately, COVID changed all that. But yeah, we did try to retire there.
Okay. For one year. Oh, that's what made, okay. And had you ever heard of FACT? Or?
No. But they, the West has its long swords, its long knives out for Thailand. You know, they're trying every which way to subvert it. So go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. So right on the FACT page, when in the support section, the first thing that he mentions, and he's just a one man operation really, is the GIF consortium. So he said, Freedom Against Censorship Thailand is a member organization in GILC and GIFC, Global Internet Freedom Consortium. And then he lists other organizations he's affiliated with. But obviously right at the top, he's showing us that, you know, this is the primary group he's affiliated with, is that group, the Falun Gong US government supported, funded group. And so that's the link right there. And so knowing that he's the only identifiable real person involved in WikiLeaks besides Assange back at the founding, that's why that's important to know.
Yeah.
So his November 16th, 2006, this talks about the founding of FACT, his organization. And WikiLeaks was also founded and announced in November 2006.
Okay.
So if we look at the timeline, these guys here were founded in February 2006 through the Online Freedom Act.
Yeah.
They got their funding from the US government. And then just, I don't know, 6 months later or so, both WikiLeaks and FACT were founded and in the same month, in the same year. And here, this is a blog post that this guy CJ Hinckley wrote in 2019, supporting, you know, Assange being released from prison, I think, or from the embassy. And here he tells us that FACT provided the very first leaked documents to the new WikiLeaks platform back in 2006. Thailand's military coup's internet block lists were leaked to FACT by government officials, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's just saying like some contact in the Thai government leaked documents to this white American expat who just started up his own, you know, website, WordPress website. And then he gave that to Assange as the first leak, right? Even though he's involved with this group, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we see that these guys are like two peas in a pod, essentially. And that this guy, CJ Hinckley, and here's his photo right here. Oh, wait, you can't see my full screen, right?
No, I don't. I guess no. But don't worry about it.
Yeah, but yeah. So that's sort of the link, and that's what makes me think that WikiLeaks came out of this Online Freedom Act. Yeah, yeah. Just to give you kind of the background.
Really interesting, and all the Chinese connections. That is just bizarre. Right. Falun Gong.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really out there. Well, Josh, what do you say? I mean, obviously, if you point this out to people, they probably go absolutely ballistic about Julian Assange and claim that you're the devil incarnate. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure yet. I mean, they do have that, like, everything that he's put out has been legit. You know, hasn't been fraudulent documents. And so they sort of have that fact, and that kind of makes them believe that he's a legitimate actor. You know, I can point out these things to them. It takes a little bit of time to point it out. But yeah, I can kind of point to this, the malaria post. I can point to their primary interests, you know, are the Global South, written on their original page, and that they were Chinese dissidents, and then all of a sudden they weren't Chinese dissidents. You know, after the Iraq war logs, anyone associated with WikiLeaks, whether they're consultants or staff, were all from Britain, Iceland, the US, so white Westerners, not even like Chinese or Asian names. So I can point to that stuff and that, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Do people get mad at you? I mean, have people like screamed and yelled at you for suggesting that Julian Assange is CIA?
Online, like I sort of just test ran it on maybe like only two Reddit subs that are left-leaning, more pro-China, anti-imperialist. And R-Sino, which is a Reddit sub and pro-CCP, I didn't really get too much pushback there, but I didn't get that many sort of likes or upvotes mm-hmm. either. Maybe just 20, which is very little. But another group I posted and I got a lot of pushback. Yeah, a lot of pushback.
Yeah, because you're really, you know, I mean, especially since he just got released and he's like a global hero and he, you know, I mean, I don't know what happened, but apparently, you know, I, of course, when he was in Ecuador, in the embassy in Ecuador, I was actually reading articles that he left the embassy under disguise. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, he's obviously suffered a lot, and you know, even if he was eating filet mignon every day for the last, since 2000, when did he go to the Ecuadorian embassy? I can't remember the year.
Well, I know he was there during the elections, like in 2016.
Okay.
So it had to be somewhere between like 2013 and 2016.
Yeah, so almost all, yeah, 10 years. You know, he was in prison. So it's really, if what you're saying is true, then what this suggests is that he had had people backing him in the CIA, and those people could not follow through on their continued protection, and other people had different ideas about you know, trying to go after him. And it could be the U.S. military, you know, I mean, or NATO, because because the films about the Iraq War, et cetera, were damning and gave the U.S. military a black eye, et cetera. So, but assuming that you know, he is not a compromised, he would still have to at least know that WikiLeaks is just like Google, just like Yahoo, just like the regular WikiLeaks, just like every other informational platform out there, is compromised by CIA, MI6, et cetera. So, but I did not know that about him being arrested at age 21 and being let off so easily for hacking the U.S. military. That's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that should give us pause and give us reason to not trust, everything that he's telling us. Yeah.
Well, he'll get a big book deal, and they'll do a movie. Well, actually, already has been a movie. There was actually a popular movie. I mean, like a Hollywood movie about him.
Yeah, from what I read about it, it included the hacking.
The hacking. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see it though.
And he's gonna get an eight figure book signing deal for sure for $10 million. So he'll do okay. But he did spend a lot of time in confined spaces. So. This whole thing is really fascinating, but your connections with the Chinese, that is just blows me away. And Tiananmen and following Gong, my God.
Yeah. Thanks for saying it. Blew me away too when I first saw it. And that's why I thought it would be like such big news, you know, cause kind of people sort of forgot about it. Between 2007 and when he was holed up in the embassy, sort of forgot about this start of WikiLeaks. Yeah.
Well, anything that you want to share on those tabs up on the top of your screen, and I will add those links to the interview page.
Sure.
And is there anything you'd like to say before closing out? I really find this fascinating and amazing. I can't believe it. Anything you'd say before saying goodbye? You got any more information or?
There's the whole Arab Spring thing, but I don't want to, like, you got to go soon, right? So I don't want to take up too much of your time.
No, go ahead. I thought you were done.
Oh, no. There's a lot, but you let me know if you're
go ahead. Let's do the Arab Spring. I thought you were finished.
Well,
go ahead.
Before the Arab Spring, I also want to mention cryptome.org. So this was a real hacker leaker who started in 1995. And so he was sort of doing what WikiLeaks was doing, but on a lower scale. On a smaller scale. And so, but he's a legit guy sort of in that industry, this guy, John Young, and his website is cryptome.org. I might not screen share it right now, but even on WikiLeaks, you can look up the emails that he leaked between himself and WikiLeaks staff in 2007. And what was happening, he was going to be part of WikiLeaks. They had invited him on. But right in January or 2007 or something like that, they announced a $5 million fundraiser for WikiLeaks before having leaked any documents at all. And they were just sort of claiming, we have a million documents ready to leak. They maybe gave a couple hints about some Somalian government official and corruption, I don't know. But they hadn't leaked anything yet, and there were no names. And they were wanting to fundraise $5 million. So John Young started writing these emails that he later released on his own website with WikiLeaks staff, just sort of telling them that they are probably getting their $5 million from the CIA, that they're the worst of the worst. My light just went out. How does it look?
That's all right. You're fine.
Are you sure?
You're fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You've got daylight.
You sure?
You're fine. You're fine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. And anyway, people can hear my voice. So let's see where I was.
The Cryptome guy, John Young, said, don't touch the $5 million at CIA.
Well, he wasn't. Yeah, yeah. So he was just telling them that if, you know, if they're doing this $5 million fundraiser rather than starting out just without money grassroots like he did, then they were probably backed by some government institution such as the CIA.
Okay.
Let me think. And so he went on these rants against them, you know, and essentially saying that they pretty much have to be involved with the government. So he quit because of that. So this, you know, this very legitimate hacker leaker guy who sort of was a godfather of this industry quit because of that. And so I think that's pretty telling too. And I think what they were doing with this $5 million fundraiser, like if we assume that it was sort of Assange and the CIA were WikiLeaks from the start, then they were visioning into the future that Assange would be flying different places and spending money, and maybe they would have staff, and people like journalists would start asking questions about where he got this money. And so I think what they did is they did the 6 month span where they were saying they were raising $5 million for the organization, where obviously no one would actually send a bunch of no names money. That way later on, once he was flying around the world, people would say, oh yeah, because they raised $5 million, that's where he got the money. So that's where that is. And John Young's, sorry, go ahead, yeah.
Do you think, did they get the $5 million? Did they say they got the $5 million?
I didn't see anything about it after that.
Okay.
I didn't see anything, this whether they said they got it or not. Yeah, it just like didn't quite come up after that. And then after half a year, they started leaking some stuff about.
Josh, move just a little bit to your left, because a little bit more. You're not quite centered. I don't know what happened, but well, I guess when you looked up at the light, move it towards your left.
That way.
Yeah, perfect. Stop.
That's good.
That's centered. That's centered. Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. So, man, it's kind of hard to do this with the. Let me just turn on another little light.
Sure, of course, with pleasure.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I mean, luckily I have the window right in front of me, so
yeah, you're fine. Yeah, it's just not bad. Don't worry about it.
No, it's just kind of hard to concentrate in the dark. That's all, for me at least. So, yeah, there's that. And then there is the Arab Spring. So let's see. Have you heard of Cablegate?
Just the name.
Okay. So essentially, right after they sort of gave themselves credibility through all these leaks on the Pentagon and the Iraq war and the war crimes in Afghanistan and everything, you know, showing people that they were leaking on the U.S. government, then they went right into Cablegate, which was 150 or cables between the State Department and 150 U.S. embassies throughout the world. Dating back to before 2011, you know, cables going back a decade or so, maybe, that had a lot to do with, you know, the diplomats in these countries, you know, the information they were sending back regarding the leaders of those countries. And so they used these cables, like, for instance, of Tunisia, about the leader Ben Ali there, to start what they called the Jasmine Revolution in Tunisia, which kicked off the Arab Spring. That was the first one. And people even called it, both people in Tunisia and people outside will often call it the WikiLeaks Revolution, because WikiLeaks actually leaked this stuff, basically about corruption. It's always kind of about corruption and lavish spending. 2 weeks before this, this guy burned himself alive. Due to economic reasons.
The street vendor. I think he was a street vendor.
Okay. So you've read about some of this. And so, and then they fed, they poured oil onto the fire. They started it and then poured oil onto the fire, gasoline onto the fire, once it was already going, to try to make Ben Ali look worse and try to, you know, get more citizen rebellion against that government, right? And then they did this over and over. So they did it in Egypt, and Assange actually lived in Egypt in 2007 in a house right in between the British embassy and the American embassy in Cairo. and so if we
this is like a John le Carré spy movie, spy book.
Yeah, and let me see. I'm going to share my screen to a different window. And I'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, this was in 2007. So he had already started WikiLeaks. So that was already his mission in life. And then 4 years later, he, you know, his leaks started the upheaval of Mubarak. And he, and then from Mubarak, it went to Libya. So there were already some protests, I guess, in Benghazi. I don't know geography that well of Libya.
It's in eastern Libya, and it's always been kind of a rebellious city. It's like the second biggest city outside after Tripoli, which is in the west.
Right, and so that was going on. Gaddafi, during the Tunisia Jasmine Revolution, had already gone on radio in an address to the Tunisian people, saying, don't believe these lies from, you know, lying U.S. ambassadors from WikiLeaks. It's meant to destabilize the Tunisian government. So that's what Gaddafi felt was going on even before protests hit Libya. So WikiLeaks put out some leaks from these cables, from Cablegate, about corruption amongst Gaddafi's children, essentially, and lavish spending and stuff. Once they put those out, 2 days later, the protests went massive in the center of Tripoli only 2 days after they put them out. And then that's what spawned the greater Arab Spring once that happened. From there, it really wasn't too long, and I could even check. Yeah, only like 2 weeks after the protests hit big in Tripoli, then the UN backed a no-fly zone. And not too long after that, Britain, France, and the US just decided to take over the fly zone.
Of course. No-fly zone.
Yeah. So essentially, Assange took out Gaddafi, is what I'm saying here. Then it also hit Yemen, and they were able to oust the leader of Yemen, which later on led to this, it's a little complicated there, but later on led to this whole Saudi bombing of mm-hmm. Yemen and the Houthis and everything. So he caused the destabilization in that whole awful war there. And it also caused the protests in Syria, which led to the civil war. Yeah. So this was all WikiLeaks, and he has interviews, and I'll show you one with Amy Goodman. Let's see here. Where he sort of talks about his strategy. Let's see if we have sound. Let me know if you can hear this.
Also, in our strategy in dealing with this region,
you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So yeah, I'm gonna play like a.
Also, in our strategy in dealing with this region, and our survival strategy for Cablegate was to overwhelm. That is, we have Saudi Arabia, for example, propping up a number of states in the Middle East, in fact, invading Bahrain even to do this. But when these states have problems of their own to deal with and political crises of their own to deal with, they turn inwards and they can't be involved in this prop-up. So Cablegate as a whole caused these elites that prop each other up into region within the Arab-speaking countries and within between Europe and these countries and between the United States and these countries to have to deal with their own political crises and not spend time giving intelligence briefings on activists or sending in the SAS or other support. And activists within Tunisia saw this very quickly. I think they started to see an opportunity. And that information, our site, a number of WikiLeaks sites, were then immediately banned by the Tunisian government. Al-Akbar was banned by the Tunisian government.
Yeah, so he's saying he was strategically putting out these leaks in order to isolate the leaders in the region from supporting each other. So he had this strategy for destabilization during this whole Arab Spring thing. And
presented a number of different facets. A sort of that everyone could see, and no one could deny that the Ben Ali regime was fundamentally corrupt. It's not that the people there didn't know it before, but it became undeniable to everyone, including the United States. And that the United States, or at least the State Department, could be read that if it came down to supporting the army or Ben Ali, they would probably support the army, the military class, rather than the political class. So that gave activists and the army a belief that they could possibly pull it off. But this one.
Yeah. So did you catch what he said in that second part?
So he's claiming that he caused Ben Ali to be deposed.
Yes, exactly. And it sounds like an intelligence operative plan. Yeah, that's what he was
saying. You know, I lived in Tunisia for 2 years. I was in the Peace Corps there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was a Peace Corps volunteer from 1980 to 1982 for 25 months. I was an agricultural extension agent working with dairy farmers there for in the mountains in the northeast of Tunisia for 2 years. So I know the country like the back of my hand. Wow. And Ben Ali was corrupt, but so are Joe Biden and Macron, Emmanuel Macron, and so are, you know, Rishi Sunak and Schultz, yeah, and every other Western leader are just as corrupt, if not more corrupt. Yeah. So that's really interesting. So he actually is bragging about the Arab Spring.
Exactly. And in another interview, he even says, yeah, I'm really proud of it, speaking to the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions, which he kind of claims some responsibility.
And he was living in Cairo between the U.S. and American embassies in 2007.
Yes, here, let me show you that clip real quick. It's right here.
I lived in Egypt during 2007, so I am familiar with the Mubarak regime and the tensions within the Egyptian environment. Actually, I was staying at that time in rather unusual circumstance where I was staying in Miss Egypt's house. And Miss Egypt's house, other than having paintings of Miss Egypt all throughout, was clustered right between the US Embassy and the British High Commission, with a van outside filled with 24 soldiers in front of my front door. And so for the sort of work we were doing, this seemed to be the sort of the ultimate cover, if you like, to be right nested amongst this.
Yeah, so he just happened to find a house right in between, you know, the British High Commission and the U.S. Embassy.
With Miss Egypt?
Miss Egypt? Yeah, yeah. Miss Egypt. I don't know.
What is it called? Miss Universe, Miss World. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yep. Miss Egypt in that sense. Yeah. Yeah. So
unbelievable.
And he goes on to say he got to kind of know the political landscape during that time of Cairo and Egypt from being there.
Hmm. Really thought-provoking.
Yeah. So he kind of brags about this stuff. He, in a number of interviews, he details his strategy of isolating leaders, pouring oil onto the fire once protests are going. In Tunisia and places even caused the protests to begin with. So it's almost like a strategy for him to destabilize. In another interview, in a moment, if we have time.
Yeah. I want to see the whole thing.
Okay, because let me check my notes real quick. Okay, yeah, News Channel 4. Let me see where we're at here.
4 minutes and 41 seconds.
I'm trying to see which one is News Channel 4. Not this. Sorry. Okay, I think it's this one. And 442. Yeah, it is. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, what he's going to talk about here is, this is from 8 years ago. So that would be 2016. So this is after it took place, but he talks about how the Arab Spring, about how his actions caused these Arab Spring upheavals of these leaders. And by the way, all of these leaders, what they all have in common is they had ruled for a long time. They had stability in their countries, and they were keeping radical Islamic terrorism in check, like all of them across the board, Yemen, Gaddafi, Assad. And you know, prior to 2016, I would say prior to Trump, we were basically in the war on terror, right?
Of course.
And even though we were in the war on terror, what they really wanted, the U.S. government, was these radical terrorists to destabilize, right? And so here, I'll just play this clip and we can talk about it.
We have a very interesting situation in world affairs where you have a popular uprising that frays the existing order within a country and creates space for something new. Now, left to the domestic forces alone, that seems to produce reasonably good results. So we see those reasonably good results in Tunisia, for example. But when there's significant outside forces, organized outside forces, as there were in Libya, as there were in Egypt, attempting to interfere, well, those outside forces, NATO, for example, the United States, Saudi Arabia, they are already very organized. They are organized governments. And so they have an organizational capacity that a new structure that is trying to evolve, a new democratic structure, does not have.
So at one level, Cablegate describes...
Yeah. So, yeah, in case anyone watching didn't catch exactly what he was saying there, he's saying that he's pretty much aware that, you know, the U.S. and NATO, these outside forces, as he calls them, will come in to a destabilized situation, into a situation where there's a power vacuum, and essentially, I don't want to say take over, but exert their influence. And this is after the Arab Spring, but people see Assange as just this really kind of intellectual and smart guy, and this guy that gets geopolitics. And he's often talking about geopolitics to us as though he kind of gets it better than the average person, sort of explaining it to us. So it's hard for me to believe that he didn't get this back in 2011 before he destabilized this whole region and all these leaders. I don't know, was there anything you wanted to...
No, he reminds me of, do you know who Gene Sharp is?
I can't remember, no.
Well, Gene Sharp was the head of the Einstein Institute, which is a CIA cover. It's a CIA shell cover. And he was the one that developed the whole idea of peaceful resistance to overthrow unfriendly countries. And he was actually in Beijing days before the days before June 4th in 1989, and they're organizing the students and trying to foment violence. And then Deng Xiaoping finally figured out what was going on and deported him to Hong Kong. But he's considered to be the godfather of color revolutions. He was the guy who came up with this whole, giving it a name, giving it a symbol. He wrote the book on that, and that was called the Einstein Institute, which is a real sacrilege to Einstein because he was a socialist. All this that he's talking about, it sounds like what Gene Sharp would say, and he was a CIA agent. I mean,
right?
He was running a CIA front.
I got to check him out, and I really want to check out Einstein Institute.
I'll send you. I have all the links on the China Writers Group Tiananmen Library website, and I'll send you the stuff on him.
Thanks. So I've seen a video or two, I think, of yours about Tiananmen, which are really good.
Yeah.
Was there a name for that revolution?
No, that was really the first one, and they just called it Tiananmen. But then after that, they started, the Cyprus Revolution and Libya and Lebanon and the Umbrella Revolution in Hong Kong and the Orange Revolution in Georgia, and they were giving these names, so that it was like branding, so that it would stick in people's minds. So Anything else you'd like to show us on those tabs up there?
Well, I'll just show you the last thing he says here about ISIS.
Before the Islamic State existed.
Well, where did the Islamic State come from?
Okay,
where
do you believe America created it?
Destabilization.
Clearly
in
by
Syria,
destabilizing Syria.
In Syria and in Iraq.
Did America create the Islamic State?
American destabilization, together with the destabilization provided by Europe, Libya, together with the destabilization provided by U.S. allies, Saudi, Qatar, and Turkey, is what has created the Islamic State, and it is what continues to propel the Islamic State.
But it is a...
Yeah. So, like, he obviously knew that this, overthrowing of leaders would cause destabilization, that what he just talked about with the powers that destabilized and caused ISIS after. I would say that Libya is sort of the perfect example for this sort of libertarian philosophy that... that if you get rid of corruption in government, then everything will get better. Because they got rid of corruption there, or they got rid of these corrupt officials and Gaddafi's kids and Gaddafi. So the corruption was gone. So theoretically, all that money that they were siphoning off should then be there for the common Libyan to benefit from. And it wasn't. The common Libyan is probably living worse off, well, definitely living worse off post-Gaddafi than...
It was a socialist paradise. That's why they wanted him out.
Right. During sanctions, they were doing good.
They were the people, free housing, free education, free medical care, two cents a gallon for gas, free education at Oxford and Cambridge, huge payouts for babies, to have children, literally giving people a free house, building irrigation canals in the desert, to feed the people. But what sealed his fate was that he wanted to use his Libya's 200 tons of gold as to create an African dinar, a gold-backed African dinar, and that signed his death sentence, because then that would threaten the dictatorship of the U.S. dollar and to a lesser extent Europe. So that's why he was taken out, because he was trying to make Africa independent and free from Western colonialism. So, of course, that 200 tons of gold disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to it, but the last time that they heard about it, it was sent off to Europe someplace.
Oh, he in Libya's vaults or reserves.
It had 200 tons of.
That's of how gold, they were going to start.
Yeah, the African dinar. And within days of him being assassinated, sodomized on camera, and then murdered, that 200 tons, and the best they can tell, it went to either Switzerland or London.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
So
it's horrific.
Yeah.
They did to that country, and yeah.
Well, what else? What else? This is really fascinating.
Do you want more? Or
sure, I can.
I don't want to bore you with. Okay.
No. Go ahead. What else?
Okay. Yeah, we got a little bit more. I believe here. Yeah, here.
As a result, predominantly of these young people being organized and treated. Now, we did feed in very specific cables into this situation. We poured as much oil onto this fire as we could by releasing hundreds of cables about the Egyptian regime, and specifically about Mubarak's abuses and Suleiman.
Yes.
Now, there was a ploy to put Suleiman in power when Mubarak started to be questioned. Suleiman was the intelligence head, hated by human rights activists.
Yeah, so essentially just that part about throwing as much oil onto the fire as possible during the Egyptian.
He admits that.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a strategy that he's like telling us about, like proudly.
To take down governments that the U.S., that the United States and Europe don't want.
Exactly. And Egypt, after Mubarak, they ended up with Muslim Brotherhood for a bit, and then military coup, Muslim Brotherhood, and both were authoritarian, and nothing improved there through his...
Well, and of course, Muslim Brotherhood was eventually subsumed by the CIA. I mean, now the Muslim Brotherhood is the CIA.
Oh, so, okay.
Absolutely.
I didn't know that, but
it didn't originally start out as CIA, but it didn't take the CIA long to use it as a source of tension to destabilize governments in the Muslim world.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why so many Muslim leaders ban it, because they know that it's there to try to destabilize the government and overthrow it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I would imagine it also brings some elements of sort of just to maybe orthodox Islam that those leaders who are more moderate might not want. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not either, but I do know. I've read articles about how it was taken over by MI6, CIA, and kind of like, you know, Gene Sharp and it sounds more and more like Julian Assange as a way to destabilize government. So
yeah.
And put in a puppet government that will do the West bidding.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Exactly. Yeah. Have you got another one? I see Clinton urges global something. What's that?
Oh, so this is actually about the global internet freedom.
Okay.
And so in 2010, she was pushing this at the museum, sort of citing like China, you know, as this, the great, what do you call it?
The great Chinese firewall. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was saying, you know, we have to fight this. And so she was out in front with this global internet freedom.
Oh, I see. Oh, internet. Okay. I see.
Yeah.
All right.
That's where these people come from. I mean, I'll show you one where he talks about being proud about these Arab Springs.
Sure.
But this is almost textbook WikiLeaks theory. You've always said if information was available, there would be a political flow on. I mean, you must be sort of ticking your boxes. You're going, there would be an impact.
It's extremely gratifying. Yes, I mean, I've had all these troubles in London, but to see this happening elsewhere is, you know, worth every cent of time wasted on the other thing.
So what was he
talking about? London? I didn't catch that.
He was mentioning London as a side note. This was more talking about Tunisia and So he was saying like it was totally worth it. It was awesome to see.
Governments being overthrown and people being killed and riots in the streets and blood. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
Another golden calf slaughtered. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, I feel, I feel as though him being, because I put out a video, it's kind of about this stuff, the Arab Spring stuff. I still hadn't dug up yet before he was released from prison, and so I kind of feel like his being freed from prison sort of helps my argument more than anything. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, it's really. I just wonder. Obviously he did all this and he was thinking that he was bulletproof. Yeah. And he wasn't, you know, somebody didn't like him. And I don't know, it was these two Swedish women talked about, unprotected sex. And I don't know where he was when that happened, but
Sweden, I'm pretty sure.
Was it pretty with Sweden? So obviously, yeah. So obviously, you know, he did all this, and if he is compromised, and it sure looks like he was definitely involved in these government overthrows, then he would not be the first agent to be betrayed. And that's for sure. I mean, this happens all the time. Right. And others get assassinated, are we finished? I don't want to say it's time to wrap it up, and you still have more. Do you have other things, or do you want to kind of wrap it up?
Well, I'll just add quickly about after this Arab Spring.
Okay.
They hadn't been able to take out Assad.
Yeah, yeah, he's still there thanks to the Russians.
Yes, yeah, totally. Yeah. And so WikiLeaks, after the Cablegate, their next thing was called the Syria Files, which was both to embarrass the Assad government and to embarrass any corporations doing business with the Assad government. So they had this Friends of Syria conference in Paris, I believe in 2012. They'd had a couple of them before, but this was now like the largest of them. I think China and Russia were abstaining or weren't quite on board, and the UN didn't go for UN sanctions on Syria, but they got these 100 or so countries together anyway, and even Kofi Annan, not so much as the spokesman for the UN, but as a spokesman for the cause of sanctioning Syria. And so that's what they were doing at this conference in Paris in 2012. And WikiLeaks announces this release of the Syria files the day before this Friends of Syria movie. So, and to think that just by coincidence, someone dropped in their Dropbox 2.5 million documents on Assad in Syria just after they had caused the Arab Spring. I don't know. It's not believable to me.
Well, you know why China and Russia didn't jump on board is because they were mortified. They were mortified by what happened in Libya. They actually agreed to the no-fly zone. China and Russia both voted because they could have vetoed it, but they didn't.
Right.
And they were absolutely mortified what the West did after that. You know, they bombed it. They bombed it into oblivion, and now it's a slave state.
Right.
And then I can't remember when the North Korean sanctions were. I'd have to go back and look. I want to say 2006 or whatever, 2007. I may be off on that, but they voted again for sanctions on North Korea, and of course now I obviously ended up regretting it terribly. And and then of course now with Russia signing a mutual defense treaty with the DPRK 2 weeks ago, when President Putin went to visit the Korean leader Kim, that obviously that those sanctions are, Russia's going to make sure those sanctions don't keep causing people pain and misery, and I'm convinced that also China, with so much common border between and railroad tracks and bridges and roads going across the border, mm-hmm. I'm sure the Chinese, you know, in the darkness of night, you know, kept providing stuff to the North Koreans because they didn't want the North Koreans to suffer. Yeah. And of course they're still trying, the United States is still trying to push for more sanctions on North Korea. But after Libya and North Korea, I don't think China and Russia will ever join the United States in any, or the West in general, for any sanctions anywhere.
Okay. So, I just know that was like, those were game changers for them. That's good to know. Yeah. Although in the end they felt like they had to play the game for a little while.
Well, yeah. I think they thought back then, you know, the America and the West still had credibility and, you know, blah, 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 but not anymore. So, you know, now with the global, you know, the global South rising up, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, you know, et cetera, and the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, obviously they do not have to worry so much about, you know, trying to please the Imperial West.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a totally different world at this point than back in like the 2010s.
Yeah.
2011 when Libya got attacked. Thankfully, I mean, you know, we'll see what happens, but just a totally different landscape. I mean, back then, 2011, it was just like the height of the post-Soviet era, mm-hmm. where the West could just kind of do whatever it wants, unipolar. Mm-hmm. Unipolar world, yeah.
Full spectrum dominance.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's pretty much all I got.
All you got, my gosh, that's unbelievable.
Okay.
Well, if you will, you can share whatever you want. Now, you did send me the links to your two videos. So, mm-hmm. and if all this information is in there, then don't worry about it. You don't have to. But if there's any links that you would like to share with the fans out there, please forward them to me for the internet page, the web page for your interview.
I will.
All right.
Yeah. And it was fun talking.
Josh, thank you so much. I have been talking to Josh Snyder, American living in Argentina, who has done extensive research on WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and I'm closing out this interview with a totally different perspective on the man and on the organization, and I'm sure this is going to shock a lot of people and piss a lot of people off. Your case is extremely persuasive, so I think it's definitely worth. I want people to watch it and listen to it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on and just kind of giving me the chance to present it.
This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio, Sinoland, Seek Truth from Facts Foundation, the China Writers Group, and the Bioweapon Truth Commission, signing out to Josh Snyder in Argentina, and I will give you a Buddhist bow with my Buddhist bracelet and wishing you the best in cold winter Southern Hemisphere Argentina.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.